Good afternoon to everybody. It is a big pleasure to speak here. I just want to thank Rod Meyers for the invitation. And today I will be talking about what we have called the Markov property of the vacuum and one of its main applications, that this proof, entropic proof of the A theorem. This is based on these two recent papers with my supervisor Horacio Cassini and Gonzalo Torroba. So the plan of the talk is this. I will just start making the statement of what it means, this Markov property in quantum field theory. I will pass to sketch a general proof that includes the modular explicit form of the modular Hamiltonian of more general regions. I will comment on some intuition about a state being Markovian in quantum field theory. I will pass to the main application, which is this proof of the A theorem, and also another application that is related with the unitarity bound in the CFT, and I will end up with some concluding remarks. If you have any question or doubt, please stop me. I will explain better. So, which is the statement of this Markov property? Well, we call state a Markov state if it saturates this strong suavity inequality. This is a general inequality for a density matrix representing a generic state. And for those states which saturate this inequality, it is reserved this name of being Markov. So why the name? The name comes of... S is the von Neumann entropy. In the case we have a classical distribution, it's the Shannon entropy. So if we have a classical distribution of three random variables, this Markov condition, very well known, just said that is if we have a process here in which X is the future, Y is the present, and Z is the past, it said that the probability of obtaining the value of X only depend on the present and is not subject to the remote past. So from this, we can manipulate this equality and obtain the full probability distribution of the three random variables in terms of its marginals. So for any state that is Markovian, one can reconstruct the full probability distribution only by the knowledge of all the marginals. And if we take logarithm of this equality, we obtain this. And if we take the expectation values in this equality, we obtain the saturation of the strong suavity of the Shannon entropy of the classical distribution. That is classically, in which these four conditions are equivalent. So in the quantum mechanical case, we call a density matrix Markovian. It fulfills the equivalent condition of this. This has no proper parallel in the quantum mechanical case, just these three ones. In the case of this equality between the logarithm, it is an equality between the modular Hamiltonian defined in this way, like minus the logarithm of the reduced density matrix to the region A times the identity operator in the complement. So this is an operator equality, but it's equivalent to this numerical equality between the von Neumann entropies, which represent the saturation of strong suavity. Also, the equivalent of this reconstruction property is this. Having the knowledge of this partial, of this smaller reduction, if this sigma is Markovian, we can obtain the state in the biggest algebra, which is the union of AB, just by the knowledge of the state reduced to A, B, and the intersection. So why we are interested in this is because of this inequality. This is the strong superadditivity of relative entropy. It's like having a strong suavity, but now each term is the relative entropy which has the monotonicity property, and it's better suited for the quantum field theory application because it is ultraviolet finite, but it don't hold in general. It is only true when the second entry of the relative entropy is a Markovian state. So
what do we know about which states are Markovian?
here we will ask the converse question. Usually, what we have is some naturally given some marginal to which we are going to reduce a general state, and we ask to which state is Markovian. Now we will fix the state, and we will ask to which algebras, relative to which algebras, it is Markovian. It's the converse question. So we are interested here in the vacuum of any quantum field theory, and we will ask the question of which are the region that represent the subalgebra of operator with respect to which this state saturates the strong suavity inequality. So the statement is this: take this space-time volume, this is time in the vertical direction, take a null plane, and take these two space-time volume regions A and B. The requirement of this is that the null, the future horizon of both of this region, also the intersection and the union, lies in this null plane. So the statement is that relative to these regions that we can call general null cut region, because the boundary of any Cauchy surface of it lies in the null, in this null plane, saturates the strong suavity inequality for the vacuum of any quantum field theory. In the case we have a conformal field theory, we can map all this setup conformally map to the null cone, and the statement is that the vacuum of any CFT is also Markovian with respect to this kind of region, and also with respect to this kind of region whose property is that the future horizons lies on the null, on a null cone. This is not always the case. For example, if we take some region like this, this is a fixed time slice, and take a region like this, the causal completion is very strange and don't lie in any null cone. So these are like special regions and not like this. So I will like to remark something here. This
So in your first picture, these green and red lines, they don't turn back at the top, right? They go up all the way to infinity?
Well, the requirement is that if you conformally map this feature... it is a useful way to see the requirement of this null cut, because they need to always make a round to the tip of the cone. If you draw any null cut that always make a round in the tip of the cone, and you conformally map back, you obtain this kind of region. You cannot have this kind of region. If you have a null cone, you cannot draw something like this. You need to take the round. And when you conformally map in the null plane, it says that it is some requirement on the behavior of this null cut in the infinity of the perpendicular direction.
So the sort of thing you're not allowing on the cone would close on the plane.
Yes, the requirement of closing the cone is to ensure this, the causal completion of this region has a space-time volume and to have a proper subalgebra of operator inside.
So when you specify a region on the null cone, you're essentially saying, oh, so you're computing the entropy of some algebra of operators contained in some...
Yes, the picture we have in mind is that the vacuum state is like in the Heisenberg picture, which is a fixed state that don't change in time, defining an old space-time volume. And we take the operator, the algebra operator that lives in all the causal completion of this region. So the reduction of the vacuum state is relative to all the subalgebra associated with the causal completion, not just with Cauchy surface. This is because in interacting theory, you cannot define you cannot proper smear operator in just a co-dimension one surface. You need a space-time support of the smearing functions. So this has nothing to do with null quantization. This region has a space-time volume. And I will repeat, the requirement is that the future horizon of all of them lies in the same null plane, or in the case of CFT, lies in the same null cone. So I will also have some observation here. What do we already know about this Markov property? For example, in two dimensions, this setup is this. The causal completion of the green region will be this, like a square in space-time. Time is vertical and space is horizontal. And the boundary of this region is just this disconnected set of points. So we take this A and B, the intersection and the union, and a relativistic computation said that the proper length of these Cauchy slices that I have highlighted here with these discontinuous lines fulfill these relations. And we, if we take logarithm of this, we obtain this, and by this relation between the logarithm, the central charge in D equal to, and the general form of the entanglement entropy of an interval in the vacuum of a CFT, we obtain this Markov property. So we already knew that the vacuum of CFT is Markovian in D equal two dimensions. And there is an easy way to see that holographically, because we can put this setup in the boundary, extend here a bold direction, and one can prove that all the RHT surfaces will lie in a null cone in the bulk, like this here. And one can check that their length fulfills this condition. And why I can see that so easily is because there is a symmetry that if I move the, if I deform this RHT surface along the null cone, the length of it will be preserved. So I can move all of them to the same geometrical locus, and I can easily check this. In more dimension, the picture is similar, but more difficult to draw. So it's the same requirement that the RHT surface lie in a null cone inside the bulk, which is this direction. And I have also the symmetry that I can deform this, which is the RHT surface of A, the RHT surface of B, the intersection and the union. And I can move all of them along the null cone such that I can check very easy that this relation holds. And that's the easy way to see the Markovian property holographically. But in general, it is more difficult to prove this just in quantum field theory. And I will sketch a proof here that is related with the explicit form of this model Hamiltonian. This model Hamiltonian were only known in the case of three theories. And it is associated with this general null cut function parameterized with this function gamma, lambda equal gamma, when gamma is the function of this perpendicular direction. So what about the model Hamiltonian of this region? Well, the answer is this. The model Hamiltonian of this region can be written in the null Cauchy surface as this operator. And if we have this, the Markov property follows very easy. So if we can prove that this is the general form of the model Hamiltonian of these general null cut regions, I have the Markov property in general. So I want to point out here that this model Hamiltonian is in general a non-local operator and can only be written as the integral of a local operator in the null Cauchy surface. The model Hamiltonian of the Rindle wedge is taking here gamma equals zero. So, and it can be written in the case of the Rindle in any Cauchy slice because it is the flux of a conserved current, which is the boost current. But in general, this is not the flux of any current and can only be written locally in the null, in the future null plane. So how to prove this? Well, take the Rindle wedge. I know it is the Bose operator of the Lorentz symmetry. And the unitary that represents it move any local operator in a geometrical way along these hyperbolas. In particular, if I draw here another null-cut algebra of this kind, the modular flow of the rendered wedge, which is M, which is moved geometrically, anything, will move for positive modular times any region N inside N. And the reason for this is that the future null horizon of N lies in the same null plane as in the rendered wedge. If we don't fulfill this condition, that's not true. And this condition has in its own name in algebraic quantum field theory, and it's called half-sided modular inclusion. And there are some theorems related with this, which are these. In general, if we have two algebras, M and N, which are in this half-sided modular inclusion situation, there follows a set of theorems known as half-sided modular inclusion worked out by these authors. And the same theory said that I do know very much about the modular Hamiltonian of region N, but I know that the modular evolution of N knows how to move geometrically any member of the family NS, and it will move NS to another member of the family inside for positive modular time. So here is the modular evolution of M that was the Rindler, and here is the modular evolution of N that is a non-local operator. So they move the algebra geometrically as a whole, but each operator individually is moved inside but not locally. So there are other four theorems. The second is that the difference of this modular Hamiltonian is a positive operator and fulfill this infinitely algebra that we are trying to figure it out, what implication it has in quantum field theory, because it seems like very important, but we don't have a clear answer of its role in other problems. And the third theorem that is very important is that the difference of this modular Hamiltonian, which is this positive operator, can be the generator of this new unitary operator that is also non-local and is called modular translation relative to the subalgebras M and N. And it knows how to move geometrically any member of the family to another member of the family. So the intuition about these null translations, modular translation, is that when M and N are both Rindler, one inside the other, both of them sharing the same null plane, this modular translation is just the null translation. And there is also a fourth theorem that says that these G are unique, saying that any unitary operator that moves the member of the family like this modular translation has a generator that is positive and annihilates the vacuum. In general, any state that is common to both subalgebras and is cyclic and separating is unique. So what we can do with all seemingly important theorems? Well, we can do this. Take the algebra M as the Rindler, and take the algebra N as this region parameterized by this function gamma. And I want to know the modular Hamiltonian of this. But I know that this generates null translation of magnitude gamma. That is the velocity in which this move, the operator that are in the null cone, is proportional to gamma in each null ray at each position x perpendicular. But I can engineer another operator that do the same thing, and it's this p gamma, because this generate in each null ray a null translation of magnitude gamma. So I also know that this operator is positive by this property that is basically the average null energy condition working out by this author here. And by this unitary unicity theorem, I know that G and P are the same. And that's why I can figure it out, the general form of this modular Hamiltonian. There is another way to obtain the same result, that is studying the null OPE limit of the twist operator that allows you to compute the entanglement entropy in the replica trick. And there also, we have given another proof of this Markov property without any mention to the explicit form of the modular Hamiltonian. So in principle, it will hold even if we don't have an energy momentum tensor in the theory. So that was a bit technical. I will pass now to give some intuition about what it means to be Markovian in quantum field theory. And the condition of desaturation is strong enough to fix a great part of the structure of the state. This author proved that this theorem, saying that there exists a decomposition of the Hilbert space associated with the intersection of the two algebra, such that the general state, if it is Markovian, has this general form. It might seem a bit complicated, but the important point here is that if we trace out the intersection, the state becomes separable. So a Markovian state is almost a separable state. So the conclusion is that relative to this null Kutzub algebra, the vacuum of any quantum field theory has an entanglement structure that look like a change. Because if I trace out the intersection, the vacuum becomes separable. So the entanglement structure of the vacuum with this result is more simpler than one we have expected naively. But it cannot be a separable state because that will get in contradiction with the Rieslider theorem. So it's only Markovian. So I will pass now to our main application of this Markov property.
Go back to the last.
Sure.
Are you saying there's no entanglement between regions 1 and 3 in this case?
There is an entanglement, but just the one mediated by the intersection. And
this picture, that formula.
The subtle point here is that in quantum field theory, the algebra associated with just one is just the identity, because this region has no space-time volume. Only 1, 2 has a space-time volume.
I don't get the picture.
This is the null plane. I draw 2 parabolas on it.
Yes.
The causal completion will be something like this. And these are my region A and B. But right now, I am calling this, only this region, 1, the intersection 2, and only this 3. But the causal completion of this Cauchy slice in the null plane is just this Cauchy slice. And when you ask for the algebra of operator associated with it, it's only the identity. So the statement is with this, only with.
What do you mean by row 1, 3? It sounds like it's referring to two trivial algebra.
You can reduce the state to 1, 2, but you cannot reduce the state to 1 because you will attain nothing. Here is 1, 2, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and 2. All of them has space-time volume and are associated algebra of operator, but not itself the region 1 and the region 3. So
what about region 1, 3?
Huh?
1, 3 has no volume either.
No, has no volume either.
So that's what I'm getting. In that formula, you have row 1, 3. Isn't that a state for a trivial algebra or something?
Well, the statement is a bit loose in quantum field theory. It's just a cartoon. It might be true for three theories, because in three theories, this algebra has something inside, but not in general. So it is only a loose statement. That's correct.
Can you explain why 1 doesn't have a bigger Quadratic completion?
Sorry?
Can you explain why 1's Quadratic completion is itself?
Well, it's the same argument as in the, if you conformally map this to the cone, you will obtain that it will not make a round around the tip of the cone.
Oh.
So if you ask for all the points that whose future intersect this only this region are the set of points that lies in only in the null plane. You have nothing below.
Anything below a null line can go up.
Can go off in some direction, yeah. In some place.
Go up somewhere.
Yeah.
Not hit A. Not hit Y.
Okay. Okay. Well, I will review the ingredients of this entropic proof of the C and F theorem of Cassini-Huerta, Myers, and Yale. The ingredients then were Strong's relativity of von Neumann entropy, Lorentz invariance of the vacuum, unitarity and causality, and a relation between entanglement entropy and some intrinsic quantities of the theories at the fixed point. If we don't have this this requirement, I can construct several monotonic quantities on the Rigi flow, but I cannot get any C-theorem because I need to make connection with intrinsic quantities at the fixed point. And the connection is done in general by looking at the entanglement entropy of spheres of radius R in a CFT in D dimension has this general structure. This is the area term, this is the sub-area terms, and this is the universal pieces, which is the term proportional to the logarithm in even dimension and the finite term in all dimension. So these are our candidates to be ordered on the Rigi flows, and we will use vacuum entanglement entropy to prove that they are monotonic on the Rigi flows. So just for completeness, I will review the entropic proof in two dimensions. It was like this. Just take A and B as these two regions, take the intersection and the union. Unitarity and causality is used here to generate all the causal completion of this algebra. And apply the Strong's relativity for the vacuum reduced to these regions. But if we put number to this, I call a lowercase r to this segment and a capital R to this one, a relativistic computation gives that the proper length of this boosted interval are these. So I can convert this general inequality in a numerical inequality, a functional inequality of only one parameter. So I can take the limit, this limit, and obtain this second order derivative inequality on vacuum entanglement entropy, define this a function that is monotonic with the distance and with the Rigi flows, because when we look at a small distance, it will measure the property of the theory when it is very similar to the ultraviolet point and the same in the infrared when the radius is very big. And with this relation, we make connection with the quantity we want to order, that is in this case the Virasoro central charge, which coincide with the trace Euler trace anomaly. And so this function, this CR entropic function, is monotonic, and in the fixed point equals the Virasoro central charge, and we obtain this general inequality, that is the C theory in two dimensions.
So where do you use unitarity in this argument?
Unitarity is that, well, I can make a draw here. I'm thinking that associated with this Cauchy slide is some algebra of operators. I can deform it to be like this. And it's the same algebra by unitary evolution. And the same with the other. And that's the way I can identify the intersection and union algebras. So in the case of three dimension,
there's some subtlety involving the role of the cutoff, because
then you really have this log epsilon where epsilon is going to zero in all of these.
Yes, but here.
Is the epsilon the same for one hypersurface and another? I mean, they're not.
You choose the same cutoff all the time.
Same meaning what? Same proper length or same?
Well, if you are regularizing itself, the quantum field theory in some lattice spacing, you take the lattice spacing as the same for all the boosted cutoff and so on, the boosted interval and so on. So it's the same cutoff for all of them.
Isn't there some, if you use a lattice, isn't there conflict with Lorentz invariance then?
Yes.
Well, in this case, that's true. You need a cutoff that is Lorentz invariant. For example, the cutoff of holography is Lorentz invariant, and nobody knows what it means in quantum field theory. But you.
So there's an assumption that there is some sort of
yes, yes.
Lorentz invariant.
Yes,
cutoff.
Sure. That's true. Very good, thank you. Well, in three dimensions, 8 years after, they figured out how to proceed. And the problem is that in t equal to the intersection of two boosted segment is a segment, but in t equal three, the intersection of two boosted cycles is not a cycle. So it's not sufficient to apply Strong's relativity. You have to apply this symmetric form of Strong's relativity. It is obtained by the usual Strong's relativity by adding another term and applying several times Strong's relativity. You will get this symmetric form of Strong's relativity in which in the right-hand side there are capital N terms and in the left-hand side there are also capital N terms. So we take this set as a boosted sphere seated on a null cone. And this set that appears in this symmetric form of the Strong's relativity, one can check that they are associated with this set here that we call wiggle sets. So what to do now is that just take as this boosted sphere, all of them have the same proper radius as in the case of d equal two dimension. Put all this right-hand side in this way. And in the limit of large n, I can put this as an integral of the wiggle entropies times some density of its appearance in the intermediate radius. So the delicate step here is that assimilating this, the entanglement entropy of this wiggle set as the entanglement entropy of smooth cycles associated with this wiggle set. And the argument at that time was that these corners that are the only feature that makes this wiggle set different from a smooth set are actually not there because this surface are seated on a null cone. And in a null cone, there is no notion of angle. If you take the inner product of any two vectors living on a null cone or in a null plane, it will be the same, independent of the position. So all these angles are P. And it's like the entanglement entropy of this, which we have some space-time deformation, it is not seated in a fixed time slice, is the same as the entanglement entropy of a smooth cycle. So having this, we now have an inequality relating some function of S of the same magnitude. We can play the same game of taking this limit and obtain this second derivative inequality that allows you to define this F of R function. And with this relation, I can make the connection because this finite part of the entanglement entropy of a cycle in a CFT is the finite part of the partition function of the same CFT transplanted to a sphere. So that's the way they obtain this entropic proof of the F theorem. That's, that is up to now the only proof that is known yet. So what about the, these two inequalities? Because it seems that if I know the density of appearance of this wiggle set, I can know this in all dimensions. So why not apply this in the equal four dimensions? I always have this, that is true, but it's useless because I don't know how to manage this entropy of the wiggle sets. And this is the general expression in all dimensions for the density of appearance of these wiggle sets. So the question is, can I substitute this wiggle entanglement entropy with smooth entanglement entropies? And the answer is no, because if we apply this, for example, in a fixed point in four dimensions, I will obtain that the trace Euler trace anomaly is negative, and that's wrong. And the reason is that in three dimensions, I have only one feature that were these corners, and I have a way to justify that they are not there. But in the equal four dimension, this is like the time slice projection of this wiggle set that live in a null cone in four space-time dimension, looks like this, and there are more features now, because I have these triedral angles, these triedral angles, and different local curvatures that it is a feature that was not present here. So there are many reasons why not I can do that. So given these problems, we follow a different strategy that is the following. Not compare just one vacuum, just compare two vacuums, one of which is the vacuum of the CFT in the ultraviolet at the beginning of the RG flow. And the other one is the vacuum of the quantum field theory that is obtained by perturbing the CFT by some relevant deformation. So we have two of these. This is the strong selectivity. And we know that this state is Markovian relative to these A and B boosted spheres. So I have this a strong superadditivity of relative entropy, because now the second entry state is Markovian. And it's the same as having the strong selectivity of a difference of relative entropy, of a difference of entanglement entropies, because I can always put the relative entropy between two states as a difference of the expectation value of the modular Hamiltonian of the second entry state minus the difference of entanglement entropy. But because inside this inequality, this is zero, I only have this. So inside this inequality, the difference of entanglement entropy has the monotonicity property of a relative entropy. So I can now take the symmetric version of this new strong selectivity of a difference of entanglement entropy, and allow to substitute the difference of entanglement entropy of the wiggle sphere by a difference of entanglement entropy of smooth spheres. Why? Because I can sandwich this wiggle set with a smooth sphere from inside and a smooth sphere from outside. And by the monotonicity property in the limit of many of these boosted spheres, they will converge to the same point. So we have now this that this substitution is okay, it's true. And if we take the limit of capital R goes to lowercase r, we obtain this general inequality. And this is our main result, because it unifies all the C theorems known in two, three, and four dimensions. And the key ingredient here was this Markov property of the vacuum, in this case, the CFT vacuum. So if we apply this in four dimensions, we have no SF function, but we directly take the infrared limit of this. One of these differences is always the entanglement entropy of the ultraviolet CFT. So having this relation with the Euler trace anomaly, we obtain plainly this inequality that is the A theory, and is our main application of this. I will also comment in another small application of the Markov property. which is really, I have just mentioned this, that this inequality unifies all the old known set theorems on their statement about vacuum entanglement entropy. So another application is this. What about the relation between strong suavity and unitarity? Unitarity is an inequality over all the vectors of the Hilbert space, and vacuum strong suavity is an inequality for just one state over many regions. Which are the relation between them?
What does the second statement mean? Unitarity is an inequality over all the vectors of the Hilbert space.
Unitarity is just this, that any operator that you produce with many local operators over the vacuum has a positive norm. And this will limit, in the CFT, the dimension that you are allowed to put for the operators. For example, at this. Unitarity, this general inequality, for many of them, you can put here. Bigger than zero, which implies if you use the relation of the CFT n point function, in this case it is enough to look at the 4-point function, you obtain that the scaling dimension of a scalar operator cannot be lower than this, and the scaling dimension of a fermion operator cannot be lower than this, and in general for a spin J it cannot be lower than this. Okay? And so we ask the following. Is strong suavity is so powerful, it can obtain these simple results.
I still don't quite understand why you call it unitarity, but maybe we can.
I don't call it the unitarity. This is not a unitarity bound. These are the unitarity bound. Unitarity means that all your any point function can be represented as expectation values of a sandwich of a vacuum state vector in some Hilbert space of some operator acting on this Hilbert space.
Yeah.
A quantum field theory can be just be defined.
That's just positivity of the Hilbert space.
Yes, but not all any point function of a suppose quantum field theory must fulfill this representation in a Hilbert space.
That's true, but maybe we should talk later.
Okay.
I don't see how you can connect this what is normally thought of as unitarity. Some sort of evolution.
Maybe this is a good name, but I have not put this name. Yeah.
The requirement of the effects of the Hilbert space, which is the positive definite in the starting point, is included in what unitarity is.
Okay. But normally unitarity has more to it.
Sure, but
yeah.
It particularly has the.
Okay. And you can have a theory, at least on
that. Yeah, maybe it's not a good name, but.
You can have a quantum field theory with a non Hamiltonian, but define on a Hilbert space. That would be fine, or it would be positive, but the ocean would not be an integral. And so I'm not sure how that connects to unitarity of quantum field.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you have a non-unitary ocean and yet have a Hilbert space.
Yes.
So I think you must use as an unitary ocean somewhere.
So it, up to now it's just a name, I don't put this name. So the question is this. Can strong suavity reproduce these simple results? And the answer is yes, but with the help of the Markov property.
Can I ask one other thing? It's an inequality over all the vectors of the Hilbert space. It sounds like you mean it's an inequality over all the operators or all the endpoint functions.
Because is it supposed that any vector in the Hilbert space can be obtained by acting on the vacuum with the operator of your theory? And this will make a statement about the operators.
Yeah.
If you want to be represented as operators.
The scaling transformations of the Hamiltonian sphere are part of the conformal algebra. So positivity of the inner product allows you to derive things like positivity of expectation value of the Hamiltonian, things like that. For example, the inflexibility of the spectrum of states on a sphere would have real positive eigenstates.
If it's not positive, you don't have a Hilbert space, right? So what you thought was a Hilbert space is not. Just, you know, in CFT.
I'm saying in CFT, it's quite pretty reasonable to call unitary the requirement of the space of states as positive norm.
Yeah. But not in the essence, but if it's a Hilbert space,
you're a positive norm of the descendants, gives you the bounds.
You can describe a CFT just by a set of any point function without any representation of a sandwich of operators between a vacuum in a Hilbert space. And in this case, you said that the CFT is not unitary. But it's still there because you are given all the any point function of it. Well, how to do that? The setup is this. Take very far apart two of these null cones, put the two boosted spheres here and another remote sphere here that it doesn't matter so much. And the statement is that this state, just reduced to the union, is Markovian with respect to these two. That's the easy part. So if I make the tensor product with the reduction of here, it is Markovian with respect to these two union, the intersection of both and the union of both. But the state reduced to the union of both of these and this is not Markovian with respect to the same range of algebras. But it is, well, but I know this is Markovian with respect to the same set of algebras. So in this case, I have that I will take this as the second entry state in this strong superadditivity of relative entropy. But looking at this form, this is nothing that this superadditivity of the mutual information between these algebras here. That seems a little bit complicated, but we will find an application of this. So we have this now for the vacuum of a CFT. I have put here this strong superadditivity of mutual information. And with this, I can construct, as before, a symmetric version of it, which has this form. And here is that the mutual information between the Weigel set that is formed in this, when I take the symmetric form of this, but I can keep the Weigel symbol because the mutual information is also monotonic. And I can, by the same argument, I can sandwich the Weigel set from inside and from outside, and I can assimilate this mutual information between this Weigel set and B as a smooth set and B. So there is also a result from Cardi that says that in the limit where this distance is very large, the mutual information have this asymptotic behavior. So if we substitute this inside this, we obtain only an inequality for the part of the behavior of the mutual information related with the radius of this part of the inequality. And by, But by a dimensional analysis, I know that this function is proportional to two times the scaling dimension of the, here delta is the lowest scaling dimension of the CFT. That's your question? Thank you. So I can only make a statement, I can only limit the dimension of the smallest scaling dimension operator of the CFT. So if I take limit here, I obtain this general inequality, substituting this behavior with the dimension, I obtain this inequality, and this is nothing more that the unitarity bound on the scalar field. So when I use here that I was talking about the scalar field is by this form of the mutual information. So I can do the same in the case of a fermion. In the case of the fermion, the difference is that it matters the relative orientation of this Bose sphere A sub I and the remote sphere B. And this will introduce a new term in this inequality that has this form. And the effect of this is that when I take the limit, I will obtain a different inequality for the part of the mutual information that is related with the boosted cycle here. So when I substitute the dimensions here, I will obtain another inequality that is the fermion unitarity bound. And we can repeat this same game for other spins, but we are trying to figure it out how to obtain an inequality not just by the lowest scaling dimensions operator, but for all the operators. But the setup will be more involved, so I can tell you up to now this. So I will conclude here with some remarks. That is that this general inequality is valid in all dimensions and unifies all the known C theorems in 2, 3, and 4 dimensions. We also have obtained an explicit form of the modular Hamiltonian of these general null Kut regions. And this statement that is a bit loosey, as you said, that the vacuum has an entanglement structure that is simple than the one we have expected. Holographically, it's very easy to check the Markov property. And with a Markov state at hand in quantum field theory, we are in a better position because we now have this strong superadditivity of relative entropy that is stronger than strong superadditivity. And we hope this Markov property serve to discover new aspects of quantum field theory and CFTs in the near future. And that's all. Thank you.
We have time for a question or two. Ben?
If you think about six dimensions,
yeah.
Does this inequality that you have correspond to any of the guesses? About
this inequality in more than four dimensions will only make a statement about the subleading area term, and it is not universal, and it cannot produce any theorems. We were lucky because the subleading area term in four dimensions was the universal term. But stop there. For having a six theorem in more dimension, we need more than strong superadditivity, because strong superadditivity only produces second-order derivative inequalities. So you can not get more than this.
In the proof that you gave, finally, the four-dimensional one, I didn't understand the role of this operator that you deformed the theory by.
No, what? This one?
This one, yeah.
It's just the requirement is you have a quantum field theory with an ultraviolet completion fixed point. So you can think of this quantum field theory as a deformation of the ultraviolet theory. And this is just a cartoon of this situation. And you also ask that in the end of the RG flows, you also find another fixed point, the ultraviolet infrared CFT. But this is just a cartoon for any quantum field theory whose RG flow starts in this ultraviolet CFT.
So you're not actually using the
No. I'm talking about any quantum field theory starting at some fixed point and ending at some fixed point.
You were comparing two vacuum. I'm not getting the point. I'm sorry, I'm just missing the point. So what two vacua were you comparing then? Because you said there's rho vacuum of this and sigma vacuum of this. Rho ever given?
It's simpler than this because this is an equality. I can add this equality here and obtain a strong solidity for a difference of entanglement entropies.
Okay.
And this is more powerful because I can also add this modular Hamiltonian and complete the relative entropy. And the relative entropy is monotonic on the inclusion of algebras. And that's the way I can substitute this wiggle set by a smooth set, because I can sandwich it from inside and from outside with smooth spheres.
I think that a good cartoon is to just say the size of the region sort of corresponds to going to the UV, to the IR.
So that's your question.
So within the same theory, the UV theory, you always just work with this.
I'm just wondering about the sig. You have a rho vacuum and a sigma vacuum. In the derivation, is it always just the sigma vacuum that appears?
Yes.
So there's
every time in this. The second entanglement entropy that is here is the entanglement entropy of the ultraviolet vacuum. Right. Every time, in all the time of the RG flow.
I think the rho is hidden in this delta S. So
yeah.
This delta S is the difference of entropies between this vacuum state rho, which is generic of the QFD at any point of the RG flow,
yes.
And the one at the UV, which is sigma. But all that structure is hidden on delta S. And then in the end, you get an equation for that.
In fact, so in this delta S, the UV divergence is supposedly cancelled out.
Yes.
So that is the universal.
In some cases, you need the perturbation not to be strong enough to have a finite delta S. The requirement is that the dimension is greater than D plus 2 over 2.
Okay.
It cannot be greater than this.
Okay, I'm not going to stop here, but because we have a second talk that's supposed to start now. So let's meet again here in a few minutes, let's say 5 minutes. And
okay.
Thank you again.
Okay, thank you.